Welcome to Influential She, the podcast about accelerating the influence of women in the world.
You will find us to be a fresh voice in an old conversation.
And here we are, your amazing co-hosts, Deb Soholt
and Mel Schopp. Welcome back, everyone, to our episode of Influential She. It's our conversation about accelerating the influence of women in the world. I'm your co-host, Mel Schopp.
And I'm Deb Soholt. And today we're going to be focusing on the high leverage practice of story. And I think this is just such an interesting idea to think about as women that want to be influential in the world. Then there's multiple ways to think about story. One is the story that you tell yourself, like, what are the messages that you're constantly giving about yourself that increase or sometimes decrease your power? And then there's that story that you tell others in the external world about yourself when you're asked, like, who are you? Where did you come from? What are you about? And then there's the story that really, and stories, not just one story, but how story can really move others and tap into the emotion, can be something that people remember. You know, when you think about people telling you all kinds of facts and giving you a PowerPoint slide, that does not capture your imagination or your heart. Like what powerful stories can do.
Right. And I think it's those pieces and those parts that we've been learning in speaking to women from all across the country. Pieces of their story are what we remember. It's really not so much their bio or what they've accomplished in their life. It's the pieces and the stories that they've told us. And I think it's one of those things that we would like to help other women to know, what is that piece or that part of your story that's going to resonate and help to make you more influential in your life. And so today we're really honored to be here. And we are in, is this officially house, Joan?
It's close.
Okay, so I don't know what your actual address is.
House.
Okay, so we're in House, South Dakota, in a beautiful ranch setting.
I wish our listeners could all see it.
Oh, I know. It's just
stunning. The view that we have is really amazing.
Yeah, so we're here with Joan Wink, just an amazing woman who has accomplished so much. But particularly in the area of story, Joan, you're the author of The Power of Story.
She's like an expert in story.
Yeah. And just in the way that she is able to articulate that and does a lot of writing and talks about story. But I think in our conversations today, there's many ways in which we want to talk about your story, but also how you've used story to influence others. So welcome, Joan. And I think if you could just start and tell us a little bit about this interesting person who you are. And I think this is how you and I connected, because I find you completely fascinating that we're sitting here today in this amazing ranch home, and yet you've had all these amazing experiences in your life.
Thank you. And thank you for coming. And I want to congratulate you on your new direction you're doing. This has the potential to do so much good for women everywhere.
Thank you,
and I'm thrilled. I don't know where your journey is taking you, but
we don't either.
Thank you
it's
for
unfolding
including.
Every day.
Yes. Thank you for including me. Well, I'm a South Dakota girl who returned home, and this ranch where we're living, where my was my grandparents' homestead. So to me, in ways, it's coming home. But I went to school in Mobridge, and so that was my home too. And when I left Mobridge, I really didn't come back for a lot of years. I mean, I went to visit and everything, but I was gone for a long time. And life has been interesting. But I think I'm a product of my generation, and I so remember going to undergrad, Yankton College, when it was a college, and it was clear to me by messages I think I'd received, I don't know, from the world, I guess, that I could be a nurse, a secretary, or a teacher.
Well, look at us.
Yeah, that's all, and I didn't agonize about three choices. I just knew I didn't want to be a nurse. And I just knew I didn't want to be a secretary because I could see they were typing and men were the bosses, even as a little girl. I never would have said that.
Good for you.
But I could see it. Mm-hmm. So I became a teacher. But I think I was probably born to be a teacher. And really, my life has been amazing to me, too. It really has been. But the truth is, my life very much for a lot of my adulthood has followed my husband's. We left Yankton and we went to Philadelphia. Well, I started teaching 1966 in Philadelphia after leaving South Dakota. And that was an amazing experience for me. I was teaching in a room that was very upscale. I was the only person who didn't have an advanced degree. And I knew I didn't want one of those.
Interesting.
And the school was all wall from floor to ceiling. you could look over every classroom. It was on the main line of, of Philadelphia. You could look over every classroom. You could see the principal coming from halls away. And we watched.
The open concept.
Yep. I remember that.
Yeah. It was, and it's still open like that. It's still right. It's still a very upscale school. And at the end of that year, I thought I had learned one thing about teaching, and that was that teachers who teach in glass schools should not throw stones.
That's a really important piece.
Yeah, it is true. It's true. So anyway, but my life very much followed Dean's.
And Joan, you got to share why Dean was in Philadelphia. Because
Eagles, play pro football. So that was a great adventure. That was a wonderful. Yeah, and it's still, you know, kind of a part of his life.
Sure.
You know, he's a part of the reunions and the alumni and all of that. So that's, it was fun then and it's fun now.
Sure.
So really benefited us. So then life continued and we ended up on a ranch in Arizona, which was a thrilling experience. We raised our kids there and I taught in a little, kind of a little country town, Benson, Arizona. But it was a magical 9 years of teaching. Absolutely magical. And I always think those kids taught me as much as anyone ever did. And then from there, we ended up in, Dean was in the cattle business. We ended up in California. He was selling bulls. And I had a wonderful experience in an upscale community, Davis, a bilingual director, and worked with 9 different schools. And it was a great experience. But then life took us to College Station, Texas. And both our kids, we have 2 kids, they were busy in school, thriving. Dean was busy, thriving. And no one was paying any attention. And I thought, now I'm going back to school.
And so when, like, how?
I had done 2 masters while we were in Arizona.
Okay.
And that was.
You weren't doing anything then.
Wow. You weren't busy at all.
Wow, crazy.
So that was at the U of Arizona.
Right. Yeah.
Very interesting. 1 in bilingual, 1 in Spanish. And then I ended up at College Station. And that was and I was 45 when I started my PhD. So that was a wonderful experience. Mm-hmm. And then Dean and I had been together about 25 years and we were in California and I got my dream job, an assistant prof at Cal State. And then it was time to return to this ranch, which we'd been buying all along. But I just couldn't come because it was finally, you know, that was a hard time because to say, no, let's try it this way because and it worked out fine.
So talk a little bit about that, though, because I think that's interesting. So Dean came.
Yeah, he came back
to the ranch in South Dakota, correct?
Right.
And you stayed.
And I stayed in California, and we lived that way, and we said we were commuters. But we knew we were breaking norms, but we'd been together 25 years, and we thought we could make it. And we did.
Right.
I don't know if I'd recommend that.
How long did you do that?
20.
Yeah.
And then I was gone longer than that because I worked half time then last 5 years.
But so anyway, in this ranch environment, in this rural South Dakota location, you were kind of like an anomaly of the structures of how people.
Kind of in both places because in California, I was very much, you know, I think, I mean, I love my work and I loved working with the young parents who are changing life's patterns and coming back to school. And I just loved working with them in our evening classes. But yet I had my foot in the ranch out here too.
Sure.
And then back here, I was seen as being away, you know, all the time. But I really wasn't. Mm-hmm. So we went back and forth. So then finally I retired, sort of. I haven't retired very well.
No, you have not.
No, but...
So how did you start getting into really being fascinated about story and, you know, moving into that space? Because you said that wasn't something you planned.
No, not at all. This is the early, '90s, and I was beginning my career and at the professor level. And I imagine I took myself fairly seriously. And many, you know, we had 4 nights a week, big classes of 25 tired teachers who had demanding lives, you know, they're up early in the morning working all day, then coming, you know, they go to soccer practice, then they come to class at night. So they were fascinating people in many languages for me. And I suspect, beginning prof, I was fairly serious. And one night, it was really an awakening for me. It was a classroom building. It was dark. And, you know, classroom buildings at night, when they're isolated, get a little scary. Mm-hmm. And I was walking down a hall, a long, empty corridor heading home. And I could see three women walking towards me. And I wasn't worried about it, but they were having fun, I could tell. And they were walking right towards me. And one of them was imitating my physical mannerisms, which, of course, I didn't know I had. And as she approached me, the other two women were laughing, and I could see what was going on. She had me down to a T. So we stopped and we laughed, and she said to me, she said, "Joan Wink, do you know what you are?" And I said, "No." She said, "You are a storyteller."
Wow.
And I was amazed. And I didn't know if I should be flattered, honored, because it was early, you know, and I was starting a serious career. And, but actually I never forgot it. And, since that time, I've given a lot of thought to it. And, you know, as we have since learned, all of us now know, no one really wants to hear our theory or our philosophy or see our data. No one would remember it anyway. No one cares. Mm-hmm. But if we can connect those abstract thoughts to a story, I mean, we don't forget. And the stories live on when we're gone. And I think it's how we share our understandings, but I also think it's how we connect with the world. We connect with people. We connect ideas with new ideas through story. And so actually in my life since that time, I've really concentrated on story. And the way the book came about was I got a phone call, and a woman had read my blog, and she said, "It reminded me so much of when I was teaching in Kansas." And she said, "And I'm looking for someone to write a book about the importance of story." She said, "Would you do that?" I'd never thought about it. I said, "Sure, I'll do that." And that's 2 years later it was published.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so I owe that editor for that, because she had the idea and gave it to me.
When you say that they said or told you you were a storyteller, is that what you were doing? Because you were teaching what?
I was teaching teachers who were in teacher credential programs.
Okay, and were you doing a methods?
Oh, or what were which class? Oh, I taught it.
Every,
I taught
variety?
It, yeah.
Okay, theory, and you were using methods. So I'm just curious, because I would never have seen that in my methods classes. I mean, they were pretty, they were based on philosophy and, you know, curriculum.
And I've taught curriculum, and I've taught philosophy, and I've taught methods.
I'm fascinated.
And those women I bumped into, and that woman who said it, she did a master's with me, so she saw me in multiple classes. But I must have been telling some stories.
Huh.
I think we could guess, but I didn't know I was.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah, love it. That's
so in your book, The Power of Story, what are some of the nuggets that you'd like to share with our listeners, with women out there, about how they could leverage their own story to help to connect in a more powerful way with people?
Well, I know what I did. I think you have to be a little bit intentional, because we all understand a lot. We do. We've lived long lives. We've had good careers. We've learned things happily or reluctantly, whatever it is. And sometimes we want to share that knowledge. And as you said, Deb, we could get out our PowerPoints and we could get out our data and everything, but no one really learns from that. So what you want to do is focus on what you want to share. And I really have focus on specific content that I'd like to share. Things that I know other people who haven't had the advantages I've had in schools, I know they wouldn't understand, and I can understand that. Mm-hmm. How can I tell a story about it? And sometimes it takes me a year or two to develop a tight little story. And then when I get one, you know, because I practice it with people, you know, I try little bits here, little bits there, and it works or it doesn't work. And then I try to write them when I think I, because that really forces me to think it through.
So I think it would really help our listeners if you would be willing to tell a story. Do you have one you'd like to tell?
Thank you. Of course.
Because I think it would be so great, because
it'd be so fascinating.
I think to really illustrate what you're talking about to women, to think about how to put together what they want to communicate to the world, we would love it.
Okay, I'll tell you a story. I mean, it's hard to choose. And I really appreciate you asking me to do this, because it forced me to look back at some of my stories. Mm-hmm. And actually, I kind of like some of them. But I'll tell you one, because I think it might be of interest to many families. This is a story of a young woman named Dana. She was my student when she was probably about 40. And it was in a master's program. I don't know what class it was. But what I could see in Dano, she was a pure artist. She saw the world in pictures. And I used to marvel at her because I would think, how did she get through our undergrad program, which was quite regimented? How did she get through our credential program, which was very regimented? How did this artist survive? And she was in my grad class, and we had a lot more freedom to think and to learn and follow our own curiosity in the grad program. And she was just thriving. And in one of my classes, I remember there were 25 tired, exhausted teachers in this class. They showed up every Tuesday night at 7 o'clock, and Dana was there. She always came prepared. She'd always read. She'd always shared her understandings. She contributed to her colleagues. She was really an active, integrated member of the classroom and contributed a great deal to all of us. And we got midterm time, and the students, of course, had a written assignment at midterm. And at the end of the night, I said to Dana, "Dana, if you don't mind, would you just stick around with me for a little while? I'd like to talk to you." And she did, and she was the only one there later. It was about 9 o'clock at night. I said, "Dana, I'm just thrilled with your learning, and I appreciate how you share, and I appreciate how you contribute to class. But there's one thing's concerning me." She said, "What is that?" And I said, "You have not turned in one single written piece of paper yet."
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
And none of her colleagues had noticed this. And I said, "I'm a little nervous." And this young woman looked me in the eye, tired that we were, and she said to me, "Joan, you're the person who always tells us to have faith in the learner."
Wow.
That's powerful. Wow. That's what I said. I said, "Okay, Dana. I mean, there's only one answer to that." Mm-hmm. She said, "I will make my learning visible for you, I promise, and for my classmates." Okay. So then we went on week 8, week, 10, we had 14 weeks, and we got to, about week 13, and we probably had a couple weeks left. And I, frankly, was very worried because I was worried that she wasn't doing her work. I hadn't seen anything in writing. She walked into class one night, and she said, "Dr. Wink, do you mind? I have something to share with my colleagues." "Oh, no, please, Dana, you go right ahead." And she had a banner, a poster rolled up. And she said, "This is what I think you're trying to teach us." Dana unfurled this gorgeous poster in front of all of us in the class. She said, "I think you believe there's probably about 3 different approaches to teaching and learning. Really," she said, "you always tell us there are many, many different approaches, but all of us have experienced these 3 in some way." She said, "For example, down here on the bottom level, there's this one kind of education that we've all experienced a lot of, where the teachers talk and the students learn. And you can see on the picture that the teacher is talking and it goes in one student's ear, out the next student's ear."
And what do you call that? The sage on the stage?
Yeah, sage on the stage is what I've talked about.
And you can see it goes in this ear and out the other ear, and it bounces off the sleeping student. But the teacher keeps talking. And if you look over to the right then, she said, you'll see that the roots of learning are then cut and destroyed. But all of us know about this. We've all experienced it. She said, then you always talk about another kind of teaching, and you call it the generative, because you say we generate our learning together, whereby the teacher and the students talk together, learn together, solve problems together, relate to each other together. And she said, you'll see that the teacher is answering questions for the students, and the students can talk just like we do when we try to solve problems. And she said, and then you'll notice that the leaves of the plant are starting to unfurl, the leaves with this kind. And that's a very good kind of education. Mm-hmm. She said, but there's this third kind of education that you talk about, and you call it transformative, whereby not only does this good kind of teaching and learning take place in the classroom, you take it outside of the classroom too, for your world, for your community, for your friends, for self and social transformation. She said, you see in this picture, they're standing outside in the real world planting a garden in this picture. Mm-hmm. And she said, and you'll notice at this point then, the plant actually flowers and the butterfly, which is the symbol of transformation, appears. And she unfurled that in front of the whole class. And I'm so blessed because this is framed in our house now. And I have many photos of it, of course, and many places on the web where you can access it. But she gave me permission to use this in educational purposes when talking with people. Isn't that beautiful?
So what it does for me is that not only do you have the story with it, but the visual that, you know, it's giving, you know, references to what happens throughout.
Now that I've seen it, I'm not going to forget these three different kinds of learning. What happened that night? Tell us about what happened to our classmates.
For me, it was relief on my part.
Well, that she had done
relief
something.
Because she understood the class totally. And actually, this is a story which is found in Critical Pedagogy, one of my books. And she totally had captured it. But the classmates were just in awe. It was breathtaking for us. It was a moment I've never forgotten, and I've used this many times with her permission. Thank you, Dana. If you ever get to hear this, thank you. She and I are still in contact with each other. And but I so appreciate how she made her learning visible for all of us. But look at what she's done. It's a ripple effect, what she's done for other people.
Right.
Because I have taken this many... I haven't taken the poster. Mm-hmm. You're the only people to see the poster. But I have images of it, and I've taken it and shared. Because all of us, no matter what our situation, no matter what we're teaching, basically we have all experienced these three different approaches in one way or another. And we all strive to be better. Mm-hmm. You know.
And it's not even just about teaching. These three is just about life.
Absolutely.
If you're in transmission, in your relationships with others, and it's going in one ear and out the other.
Exactly.
And generative gets you to a certain point. But if you're really in a transformative space with people.
It's self and social transformation. And that's what your influential
power.
She is about.
That's what's influential she's about.
I so appreciate you are doing this for women. I really do.
So, Joan, when you wrote your book, The Power of Story, and to our listeners, women that really want to start to hone and develop, you've talked about being intentional. How would they begin? Where would they start? I mean, what's some recommendation that you could make about how they can develop their own powerful story?
Okay, I said intentional because I think that's the first step. You have to plan what you'd like to share, and then you have to make connections to a story that matters to people. My area is language acquisition, so I've done a lot of this in language acquisition. And it takes, you have to focus and be reflective. And your story won't be perfect at first. It takes time, so be patient with yourself. But think of it, what is it you want to share with the world, with your friends, with your family, wherever you live, with your book club? What do you want to share? And start thinking of how you could make a story about it. And be patient. Be patient with yourself because it takes a long time. Many of my stories take a good, honest year of playing with it and thinking about it and sharing bits of it and then writing it.
Joan, so throughout this journey that you've had, because it really is somewhat of a journey, is it not?
Oh, yeah. It's amazing to me.
How has it personally, I mean, I realize that like a story like this, but how has storytelling personally helped you in your life? Because you've become a very influential woman in South Dakota. You were appointed to the Board of Regents, you know, you have recognition for what you've accomplished, but do you see it? Has story helped you?
It's helped me talk about difficult, challenging concepts. For example, like this story, I could tell this so it's not a story, as Dana did.
Right.
We could teach this in many, talk about it in many different ways that are not compelling. Mm-hmm. But for me personally, I think using story has helped me be braver and more honest. You know, I'm a product of my generation. I was raised to be a good little girl, and I've spent years trying to recover. It's true.
It's true.
It's true.
It's so true.
And it has taken me decades. Now we can look at our daughters. They come by courage and self-awareness and leveraging their soul much more quickly than, at least in our case, my daughter is fearless.
It's true.
And your daughter is.
And my daughter's fearless. Yeah,
no, I know it. That has been, for my generation, that has been a struggle that I've had to work at, and I have miles to go. Mm-hmm. I do. I have many stories to tell that I haven't told because I'm just not quite brave enough.
Right.
You know, our generation, we limited ourselves. We were limited. And then I think good girls grew up to do a lot of self-limiting, and I've really worked at overcoming that. Probably some think I have, but no.
But I think that's a really powerful message of what you just did, what we're trying to accomplish throughout Influential She, because we all have those limiting factors that really are, whether they're self-imposed or imposed by society, or they're imposed by our environment or where we live, that we don't even realize, and to be able to talk about them.
Yeah.
And that's where we want to be able to give that strength and that courage to women who are coming up, and or maybe they're at a point, because for us, at this point in our juncture of our life, you know, we're taking a huge leap of being able to tell our story and being brazen enough.
Deb and we keep constantly saying, oh, we're too buttoned up. We're too, and then we're like, well, we're in institutional rehab because we're like, we've been so contained for so long by all these rules that are put on us by others.
Yes.
Where's our real authentic story?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's a journey for me. Mm-hmm. And it's taken a long time. And I love seeing I'm blessed. I have a lot of young friends. Mm-hmm. And they are not they do not self-limit at their age in the way I did. And I love seeing that. They're more authentic. They're not afraid to speak their voice, find their voice. And for me, it took a long time. And story helped me because I think it feels safer when you can have people involved in a narrative and making their own connections, not worrying about your connections, you know? So that's probably how it helped me.
And I think, you know, really kind of coming back to how we are just as humans in connection, it's really always been about storytelling.
It's
more heart connection of who I am.
Exactly.
Because when you talk about having the courage to tell a story, it is putting you in a vulnerable space, but it's also opening yourself up.
It is. For me, it is. Yeah, and it really has helped
And
me.
I think, you know, that's how people come in community together. Mm-hmm. And in many respects, I think that's what we're all craving.
Yes.
That it isn't just about the soundbite, the little bullet, and for women to think about really being influential, to get onto this idea of the power of story for yourself can really help to make those connections that tap into your passions, but also help you link with others to get things done.
Exactly. I think we're hardwired. I think we're born to want to make meaning, to make connections through story. I really think that's a part of us, and school sometimes takes that away from us. I think as a world, at least in the United States, we seem to be returning to it and finding it. But much of the world value oral storytelling, and they've passed their knowledge that way. We kind of put it aside during the 1900s for learning. We did. Yeah. But I appreciate that so many people are focused on it now and trying to make their understandings of the world meaningful through story.
Mm-hmm. I think that when you think of what children really want, though, how many times does my granddaughter say to me at night when she's cuddling with me, Grandma, just tell me a story.
Absolutely.
And those stories are not about, they're about the things that I did as a child or her daddy did.
Something real life.
Children want stories. Yeah. In the same way that we crave them, but we tend to it's vulnerable to let people know who we are. Mm-hmm. There's a certain vulnerability.
Yeah.
And so I think that to come back to that, to realize that's what, you know, people really want to know. And
exactly.
Hear.
Like your Vivi, it's a classic example. She's authentic.
Yep.
She's real.
Yep.
She's not self-limiting at all. No. And she wants a story. And we're all that way.
Yep.
And
we don't want to forget that. Yeah. Yep.
Wow. Well, this has been just the most fascinating conversation.
Yeah,
thank you so much for sharing of yourself.
And thank you to Dana.
And thank you to Dana.
Wow.
And we're going to share this amazing image with everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That really is just not about being in an education course. This is a life pattern of how you can think as women who desire to be more influential and to accelerate that influence.
Exactly.
By grabbing hold of your own powerful stories and making them real and taking the risk.
And getting out into the world and realizing that's how we'll make change within ourselves and within our friends, you know?
That's so true.
Thank you so much.
Thank you,
Joan Wink. And we really appreciate everyone that listened in today. And we want to leave you with this question. Have you really thought about your own story? Have you spent that intentional time thinking about how you want to share yourself with the rest of the world? And through that, accelerate your influence. We really appreciate all of you tuning in for another episode of Influential She. We really hope you'll do it again.
Thanks for tuning in. If you enjoyed our podcast, we'd be so jazzed if you rate us on whatever app you use to find us. And hey, be sure to tell all your friends about Influential She.
And please visit us at InfluentialShe.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn. And you know what? If you come up with a new one, please let us know. In the meantime, remember, stay influential.